EF United, a premier Cold Fusion conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm John Ashenfelter. I'm here to talk about Agile Cold Fusion, about how to deliver better applications in less time. And as I'm going to talk about here in just a moment, the talk that's in your book has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about now, because 8 months ago when I first submitted this talk, which was roughly how early the deadline was, there wasn't Unity and Model Glue, there wasn't Joe's examples of things in an instant, you know, building applications in an instant. There wasn't CF on wheels. There wasn't a whole handful of technologies, because technology moves at a very fast speed. And in the spirit of agile methodology, one of which its tenets is reacting to change, I changed the talk to be a little more specific. So if you are hoping to see me build an application in 10 or 15 minutes, I could happily do that. I would direct you to Joe's blog, Joe Reinhardt's blog, or his talk on Unity or something like that. I didn't think I wanted to duplicate that. So since I have the time, I did think I wanted to talk about how to be agile, because I talk about agile all the time. It is almost like religion, and I'm not sure if you hear the capital letter when I say agile, but in my mind, there's a capital letter there almost, because doing agile is sort of a philosophical choice. It's almost a lifestyle choice. It's a way to build software that sort of, once you go down that path, it's really, really hard to go back. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about Agile, talk about some of the tools that make Agile possible, and talk about the principles and practices that can make Agile a little more possible, and give you a few ideas of things that you can take home from this talk that hopefully are worth the money you spent to come this weekend, and just have something that can make you feel a little better, build your apps a little better in a little less time. So starting at the very beginning, we can always go to a dictionary. What Agile means, because it means lots of different things to different people. The dictionary definition could be characterized by quickness, lightness, and ease of movement, or nimble development, which would be nice. But synonyms always make me feel better. Think about your development right now, your development process, and just think of how many of those words apply to your development process. If you feel that you have a life development process or a frisky development process, or, as is the case in many organizations, are the antonyms more appropriate? Do you have a brittle, clumsy, oafish, ponderous, or stiff development process? So just a little thought experiment there. So, you know, we've had a definition of what the word agile means, some things that are similar, the synonyms, and some antonyms, some things that aren't agile, just to kind of get us all in the same place. Why should you care? Why should you care about doing agile software? Well, one thing that's always nice is hard numbers. You can't get much harder numbers in a soft science like computer science, at least to research about computer science methodology, than these two people right here. Alistair Coburn is probably the granddaddy of methodology research, at least one of them. His job at IBM was developing methodologies. That's what he did for a living. He developed ways to build software that met different organizational needs. He knows a little bit about building software methodologies. More recently, there's a woman down at North Carolina State University named Laurie Williams. She's in their information technology, and which is in their business school. And she does a lot of work with validating some of the agile techniques specifically, some of the things that came out of Alistair Coburn's research, and some of the techniques that you might recognize, like extreme programming. She does a lot of research on that specific methodology. She's looked at Alistair Coburn's crystal method. She's looked at Scrum, a couple of other methods like that. And she actually has academic research data that talks about how agile programming, when it's implemented correctly, different aspects of it can help, different aspects can't help. So not only is it just, you know, me having the religion of agile and other people having the religion of agile and people getting excited about agile development, there's actually hard research you can show people that need to make those decisions. You can actually show them studies that talk about agile being more productive. Just like you can show them that number that comes up at every Cold Fusion conference. I haven't seen it yet today, but by the end of the week, we'll see that 70% of software projects fail, 90% of software projects fail, whatever that number that Hal or Jeff or Ben or somebody always has in their talk, that's kind of the anti-pattern case. That's saying, you know, that software projects fail. This is showing how they can succeed. So that's one reason you should care. There's actually hard numbers. Another reason you should care. One of the things about agile methodology that makes it really fun as a developer, because a lot of methodologies are designed around management, things that you can measure. Agile's not designed around things that you can measure quite as easily. But Agile assumes you, the developer, are valuable and that it's worth investing in you, that you're not a cog that can be replaced easily. And that's just another good reason to care about it. Agile is a methodology or a family of methodologies that value you, the developer. And finally, Agile, the core focus of Agile is building software. I mean, that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? We're developers. We build software. Agile is about building software, building it better, faster, and basically more fun. So let's describe development. Like I was saying, which of these describe you? You know, you don't have to say anything out loud. Just sort of circle Chinese menu. You know, think about your development environment. Which of those words or pairs of words are more what you're used to? Or if you want to use a little more professional words, you know, is your development successful or struggling? Is it rewarding or is it frustrating? So if you can sort of circle everything on the left, then you're fine. Yeah, there are totally great implementations of other methodologies. And RUP with Waterfall might be really well implemented somewhere. I haven't worked at that place, but it always seems like your development process can be better. So there actually is a manifesto for the Agile movement. There is not just a few sayings. There's an Agile manifesto. Agile manifesto came when 17 really high-end software gurus got together up in somewhere in Colorado and had a weekend. And basically, they came to the conclusion that they know a lot about software because they've built it and they've helped other people build it through consulting. And so they came up with four things that are important: individuals and interactions over processes and tools, working software over comprehensive documentation, customer collaboration over contract negotiation, and responding to change over following a plan. And to be really clear, if you read the fine print on the manifesto, it doesn't say the stuff on the left is the only thing that's important. It says the stuff on the right is important, but the stuff on the left, the stuff in bold, is more important. Individuals and interactions, working software, customer collaboration, and responding to change. So that is the Agile manifesto. And that's you can actually sign on to the Agile manifesto, if you so wish, at agilemanifesto.org and become one of the 8,000-9,000 signatories of the Agile manifesto. But this is all great. You know, I've got religion and I'm talking about Agile. I wanted to say again, this talk's Agile. This talk's Agile in at least two dimensions. One, it's about valuing individuals and interactions. You, me, we're all at a conference. We are interacting with people. We are not doing tools. We're seeing stuff about tools. We're going over to the exhibitors hall. But I would bet that you'll spend more time talking to people than trying tools out in the other room, especially after the t-shirts run out and all the other free stuff. And like I said, responding to change is something to value in Agile. Well, the content of this talk is really different than what it was going to be 8 months ago because the environment has changed. And I would be very guilty of following a waterfall sort of development process if I gave the talk that 8 months ago seemed like the right talk, as opposed to giving the talk that seemed, you know, right last week or yesterday or this afternoon out in the hall as I was putting finishing touches on stuff. Because, again, responding to change, just since I've been here this week and I've talked to people, I've interacted, it's made me change some of the things I wanted to talk about. And so my talk has changed in a similar way. So just a quick aside, being Agile here at CF United. So here's something you can actually put into practice right away. You can be Agile tonight by interacting with people and favoring interactions and individuals over processes and tools at the Expo event. Tomorrow night at the celebration, Thursday night at the inevitable poker game, if you've never been to CF United. Hal's not here, so Jeff's going to need more suckers to play against. And of course, at the bar, where all the interesting interactions happen. And you know, you might think I'm being facetious, and I'm not. The interactions that you have with people at conferences like this and at other events like this are the things that lead to real process and tool improvements, like Cold Spring and Model Glue being hooked together into Unity with Reactor under the hood, or Sean doing the crazy Model Glue stuff in the new Fusebox 5 to demonstrate lexicons. That stuff comes out of interactions in a bar. I mean, that's how it happens. And you can ask these guys. They're here. That's the kind of stuff that happens. And, you know, things like using Hibernate, like Java Hibernate with a Cold Fusion front end, that's got to come out of individuals and interactions in a bar, too, or I don't know where it came from. So how do you become agile? If there's one thing you can take away from this talk, we'll talk some more specifics tomorrow morning during testing about some tools. But how to become agile, there's a set of principles. All right, we've talked about the principles, but there are specific tools that can help. There's tools about source control. There's frameworks and object relational mapping tools. There's testing and automation tools. There's communication tools, and then bug tracking, project management, all of those soft tools. All of those tools, which relate to different kinds of processes, are going to make you more agile. They're going to make you more able to focus on individuals' interactions, more able to respond to change, more able to collaborate with the customer instead of negotiate a contract. It's going to make you more able to do your job, to deliver better software in less time. So let's look at that first goal, working software. The Agile Manifesto, if you dig a little deeper through it, has 12 principles, and I'm not going to belabor all of them, but some of them are really good to take a look at. Because the very first principle is our highest priority is to satisfy the customer through early and continuous delivery of valuable software. Early and continuous delivery. Not big waterfall sort of let's build it all and then hope it's right at the end, but the customer's involved very early on. And the working software is the thing that we are building. That is the work product. It's not documentation. It's not meeting a specification. It's working software that meets the need. Another one of the principles of Agile is delivering working software frequently, short time scale. Most of the very specific formal Agile methodologies have 3 to 4 week cycles of about a month that have various kinds of names from when you pick stuff to do to when you're finished implementing and you actually have a rollout, whether that rollout is an internal rollout or an external rollout or a public rollout or what. That's what the time scale is, so there's no analysis paralysis. If you pay attention to Like the sexy world of Ruby and Ruby on Rails, one of the common things people do in the Ruby world is something called a Ruby Jam, which is basically a 24-hour code marathon. You'd be shocked how much you can get done in 24 hours if 24 hours is the amount of time you have, because it's an axiom of the business world. Work expands to fill the time allotted to it. So if you have a short duration, you don't waste a lot of time with endless meetings. You waste a lot of time instead working on your software and getting it delivered and making decisions and going about your business. Working software is how you measure progress. It's not lines of code. It's not bugs fixed. It's not any of these soft measurements. Working software is how you measure the progress. If the software works, you're progressing. If the software is not working, well, then you're not progressing, because the goal is to deliver working software. And to deliver really spectacular working software, you need continuous attention to technical excellence and good design. And those two things both enhance agility. We'll talk more about this as we go through it, but I've heard every year I talk about this stuff, every time I talk about it, I've heard it this week. You know, oh yeah, I'd like to get around to source control, which is much less of a conversation we have anymore, because just about probably 2/3 of y'all, if not all of you all, are on source control, would be my bet based on the way things go now. If I could only automate my software, if I could only put tests in, you know, I could do all those things. Well, Agile kind of encourages you to go ahead and do those things now, because it's going to make the software better now. And that's the goal, making the software better now. And it's going to save you time in the long run. And Agile really focuses on simplicity, the art of maximizing the amount of work not done. There is no better way to take things off your plate than to not do them because you don't need them. There's a couple of good quotes coming up about that. But speaking of which, as far as testing the application, you might know who Seymour Cray is. This is attributed to him. The trouble with programmers, you never can tell what a programmer is doing till it's too late. which is very endemic of old school software development. You give the user this product at the end of X months of work, and they say, that's not what I wanted. You know, well, it's too late. You know, they didn't know that you were doing it. You didn't know what the person wanted. Well, Agile fixes that. Any design methodology should fix that, but Agile is a specific one that has a high success rate with that. So, you know, Seymour Cray, he's a pretty bright guy with the supercomputers and stuff. I mean, he knew what he's talking about. So what specific practices, okay, if the goal is working software, we talked about the Agile Manifesto, principles that are involved with working software, what practices can you actually go home and do? Number one, absolutely number one, is source control. I'm not a bigot if you use Visual Source Safe or CVS or Perforce or any of the other ones. It's fine. Source control is crucial. Being able to revert changes, to experiment, to branch code, to be able to not to be scared, to be able to not have 10,000 lines of comments in your code because you wanted to just comment code out for a minute that got stuck in there forever, and 5 years later you're wondering why this code is commented out because people were afraid to delete it. Well, source control captures your application all of the time, and you always can get back to any state that you've saved. Source control is just a prerequisite for being agile. You have to be using source control. And if you don't have a source control solution, Subversion is the way to go if you are in an environment that lets you, mainly because it's much better than CVS if you don't already have CVS installed, and it's free, and it's used by many, many people. It's a really good tool. It's cross-platform. It works anywhere, blah, blah, blah. Subversion's a really good choice if you don't have a choice already made. So another practice that you'll hear a lot more about if you come to my talk tomorrow morning, or if you're in my class on Monday, is testing. Testing is one of the big pieces of agile methodologies. And I'm not just talking test-driven development, which you'll hear the agile people, some of them, talk about a lot, which is writing a test before you write code. But just testing. There's three crucial kinds of testing. One level is unit testing. That's what you as developers should think about doing. There's CF unit, there's CFC unit. Both of those test basically a method at a time. They test, if you want to think about, you know, mentally picture a CFC, each method in the CFC is what you're testing with a unit test. And you make sure they all pass. And that gives you, again, an enormous amount of freedom, because now not only do you have all of the versions of your code in your source code repository, but if you make a change, you've got a test. And not only do you see if it passed the test that you thought about, but all the other tests that might depend on that piece of code, you can see if they break or not. So it gives you a lot more freedom, because now you'll get an early warning system that your change had an unintended consequence somewhere else. Then there's integration tests. That's the next step up the scale. I'm going to be talking specifically tomorrow morning a fair bit about Selenium, which is basically a way to automate the clicking through a web-based application, typing in things, pulling down drop-down menus, clicking submit, and then checking the results of that so you don't have to have people do that. And so your QA team is always precise because they're running a script every time. It's not people, it's computers doing it. Computers are very good at doing dull, boring, repetitive things. People are not very good at that because things fall through the cracks. Whenever you can make a computer do something that is tedious and boring, that is a great win for you and for agility, because now instead of spending time clicking through your application, you're letting the computer do it, you're spending your time making your application better. And then finally, there's system testing, which is load testing, stress testing, performance testing. And I'll talk a little bit tomorrow about an open source tool called Grindr. But if you can't make it tomorrow at 8:15, at least take home lesson out of this is you should look at one of the CF units. You should look at Selenium, and you should look at Grindr. All of those are open source. They're free. You can download them and use them on anything. And they'll get you moving right away. And then finally, automation. You kind of heard that as the either text or subtext of a lot of what I've been saying so far. Automation is key, because if it's not done automatically, you won't do it, or you'll forget to do it, or you'll miss doing it when it's most important, or you'll have to do it by hand when it's a really bad situation. Everything's crashing. You've got a new server that's going to be coming up because your other server caught on fire. Being able to automate a build is crucial at time like that. The little bit of time it's spent to do it in advance certainly saves the panic time towards the end. But even if you don't have your servers catch on fire, automation with Ant and then moving into continuous integration with something like cruise control is perfect because it just, I didn't even come close to spelling continuous right. I apologize for that. Yeah, that's a special agile term. It's continuous testing. That's one of those special agile terms. So, you know, just note that. Continuous integration basically means as soon as you check it into source control, something that is not human, a process is monitoring that. It checks out all of the new code. It runs all of the tests. And you can use it to report the success or failure to whoever's appropriate, whether that's the individual developer who caused the problem or the manager, if you want, you know, management to be who's cracking the whip off it, over it, or you know, their wife, their husband, whoever is the appropriate person to get that bug fixed. Continuous integration certainly takes all the worry out of there because you know you always have working software at the same time. And if you're thinking, oh my gosh, that is an amazing amount of work, it's an amazing amount of complexity, what I probably should have done in this talk is set up Ant during the talk and write an Ant XML file and we'd kind of be done. Ant is very, very straightforward to use. You need to know a teeny tiny bit of XML or steal it from other Ant build files. And you need to be able to install Java and you need to be able to not be scared of a command line. And that's pretty much it. I mean, that's Ant in a nutshell. So one nice side effect of Agile is the revenge of the scripting languages. The Java and .NET people, they won for a while because they got to do all the sexy stuff. That's where everyone was interested in. Scripting languages are really cool. Ruby on Rails, you can't, you know, I mean, my mom, who is not technically literate, has heard of Ruby on Rails. Django, which is effectively Rails for Python, is really popular in the open source circle. DabbleDB made its rounds of the Agile development, which, for God's sakes, is small talk with this open source cPine web application open source thing on top of it, and it's a hosted service for building really crazy web-based applications. So scripting languages are cool now because scripting languages let you get your job done. Has anyone in here ever done EJB? Okay, how many people would like to do another EJB project? Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty small sample, so maybe sampling error, you know, caused that lack of hands there. EJB is a bear. It's just heavy development at its finest, and you don't get things done fast. You don't get things done efficiently. It is complicated to do, and it rarely gives you a whole lot more bang for the buck, except in some pretty rare situations. Scripting languages are cool. Scripting language, you write it. You don't even compile it. Everything happens automatically. It makes it very easy to experiment. Scripting languages are fast, and they get your job done. And a lot of the Agile methodologies, they're heading towards, the people who do Agile are heading towards scripting languages. Java folks, the high-end Java folks, they don't do Java anymore. They do Rails. I mean, and you think I'm joking. I mean, they all do Rails, unless they have to, because Java was just too slow. There are Agile ways to do in Java, and I'm not knocking Java. But when they have their choices, a lot of the folks, James Duncan Davidson, Dave Thomas of the Pragmatic Programmers, who is a big Python as well as Java guy, Glenn Vandenberg, Rich Kilmer, all these people who you might see on something like the No Fluff conference circuit or something that write lots of books, that do lots of big projects, they do Rails now instead of Java because it's easier to get their job done because they were focused on Agile. And they thought they were doing things pretty agilely in Java, and then they jumped on Rails because it's easier. ColdFusion, though, is an excellent example of a scripting language that can work for Agile because finally the infrastructure is starting to be in place. There's a ton of frameworks now. There's some object relational mapping tools like Reactor and Transfer. You're starting to get the ColdSpring craziness. So you've got all the tools that the cool kids have always had that did the Agile Java and then moved on to Rails. You've got those tools, so there's nothing to prevent you from doing the same thing that those folks do. So, working software. Second goal, individuals and interactions. One of the things Agile says is business people and developers need to work together daily. This is really a new idea for a lot of shops. But if you don't have the people there every day, the business people every day, how do you ask them a question? If you're not sure what a piece of language means. There's a lot of times where two business people, if you ask what an order is, if you ask a shipping person, you ask a warehouse person, and you ask a business kind of like an analyst type person what an order is, they're going to mean three different things by that same word. And you don't necessarily know that till you're partway into development. And if you don't have someone there to ask, How are you going to find that out till it's too late, or until it's more expensive to fix, or until you've delivered software that does not meet the user's expectations? Focusing on individuals here, it's talking about you. Projects around motivated individuals. Agile's all about small, self-organizing, motivated teams where people get out of their way and let them do their job. If you would like to work like that, you secretly have a desire to be agile, or publicly have a desire to be agile. That is one of the tenets of agility, is just letting the team get the job done. And this is something that's hard for us who do distributed development, of which I am one common person in that situation. That conveying information face-to-face is the most important way to do it. The more links in the chain, it becomes like a game of telephone. Or you leave voicemails or you leave telephones and you lose that opportunity cost. It's just like here, you can ask me questions, but more of you are going to ask me questions in the bar or eating lunch or something like that when you can actually interact with me individually, or more so than you're going to send an email or something like that. Face-to-face is the best way to have these talks. And this is really good if you do death marches. Agile promotes sustainable development. You should be able to keep a slow, steady pace. It's more like a marathon as opposed to a sprint. And you keep going at the same pace. You don't panic. You've got a release every 3 weeks. So you get used to it. Oh, that'll be in this release. No, that'll be in the release in the next 3 weeks, and that'll be in the release the next 3 weeks from there. You just keep at a steady pace instead of these panic stop, burn people out sort of paces, or the game industries burn people out till they explode sort of pace. Self-organizing teams are the best for architecture requirements and design. And again, it gets back to letting people do their job. And a really important part of Agile is reflecting on how the team's doing and then adjusting behaviors. Maybe 3 weeks was too short a time. Maybe you really need 4 weeks. Maybe 3 weeks was too long. You need 2 weeks. Maybe you need more people in the same office instead of individual offices because it's too hard to even get up and go office to office, and that causes too many problems. You adjust your methodology. You focus on the changes that will make it more useful. So some practices there. One of the practices that you can use to sort of hit this aspect of Agile is having developers control development, control the tools, the platforms, and methodology. If somebody is more productive on a Mac, why on earth would you force them to use something that's not a Mac? I mean, just because the corporate says so? Well, that's good, but they'd be more productive and happier without it. Why would you do that just for the sake of doing it? Let the developers decide what's best for them. As long as they're getting their job done, as long as they're delivering working software, it shouldn't matter that much. Let them choose the platform. Fusebox this platform, Model Glue the next platform. It doesn't always have to be the same platform. Let them choose the methodology. Crystal really blew this time. Let's try Scrum next time. All these Agile things really sucked. Let's go ahead and try RUP. I shouldn't just say RUP because RUP can be Agile. Let's try Waterfall. I'll replace it with Waterfall. Some practices for individuals and interactions. Communication tools are key, and there's two kinds. There's synchronous communication, there's asynchronous communication. Synchronous is best face-to-face, but phone and IM in decreasing order of importance. I find that when I'm working on an Agile team that's distributed, we're usually on the phone and IM at the same time because that lets you talk and cut and paste stuff. That just helps. There's two tools that you all have that you can use. As far as asynchronous, the king of asynchronous communications, email. That lets you respond when you can get a chance. And then a wiki is another common way to do asynchronous communication because it just lets you basically, bulletin board, whatever you want to think about the wiki as, it just captures the information as well. And then there's information radiators. What, pray tell, is an information radiator? This comes out of Alistair Coburn's stuff. Information radiators radiate information. I mean, there's a nice tautology for you. Information that's out in public really helps move the business along. For instance, if you have automated builds in place and you have a red light and a green light that is visible to everybody, everybody is being radiated with that information that the build is broken or the build is fixed. And if you sit up there staring at the red light long enough because the build's broken, even the business folks are going to come by and wonder why the build's broken if it stays up there long enough, if it's in a central place. And you're like, well, that's silly. It's just like businesses that post the stock price during the course of the day. Or back in the .com era, if you worked at .com and you had the little ticker showing your net worth, minute by minute as you worked through the day so you knew how much longer you had to work with that godforsaken company. Or how much money you had just lost, which was a much more common feeling. So some common radiators. Whiteboards are a very common radiator, you know, just messages up on a whiteboard. Computer-based dashboards. There's open source tools that tell, you know, the success of the latest build, the failures in the latest build, who's responsible for the most failures, who's responsible for the most lines of code, who's most productive, who's least productive. There's all sorts of digital dashboards as well as the whiteboards. But then there's some crazy radiators. I was alluding to the red and green lights. There are people who use lava lamps because lava lamps light up slowly. So that means you can get the report that your build failed, which would turn the lamp red, but still have time to fix it before the lamp gets hot enough that it actually glows red and the green one gets cold enough that it stops glowing green. So you laugh. It gives you some incentive, and it's an external incentive. You know, it's not just you sitting there saying, damn, the build failed. It's you saying, holy crap, I need to finish that build because otherwise it's going to be the green's going to disappear. It's going to be my fault. And the radiator that I'm playing with right now is that. It's a Nabaztag Wi-Fi bunny that blinks up colors, and you can control its ears. And its ears are going to droop as the build gets worse and worse and worse. And you laugh. Why on earth would you do that? You know, you're watching it, right? You know, and if that was sitting there, you'd watch it. You know, I'd be talking, you'd be watching the bunny. If the bunny's ears started to droop, you'd be like, oh man, the bunny's ears are drooping. Someone must have done something. You know, and if you have it over at the coffee pot, wow, the bunny's ears are drooping. Maybe I should be done with my coffee break and go see what broke and see if I can help. You laugh. Stuff like that is a really good way to radiate to anyone, whether they're technical or non-technical, what's going on. My son who's two, will know the quality of the build based on the bunny's ears, if we want to. And my five-year-old, he's good at not breaking the build. No, I'm joking. He's not a programmer at all. So, yeah. So customer collaboration, that's the third big goal of Agile. This is something that is probably really hard to swallow if you've been in the development world a long time, which is welcoming changing requirements. How often, self-included, right, do you say, but that's not a requirement, I don't have to do that. You change the requirement, it's scope creep. Well, yes, it is scope creep. But you know what? Without scope creep, you cannot react to changing business situations. You cannot react to new legislation. Our HR system didn't have to calculate out taxes to the third decimal place because we've never been in California. That was not part of the spec. Well, I'm sorry, we just bought a company in California. It needs to be able to do third decimal place calculations with taxes now because now we're paying taxes in California. You know, well, it was a business opportunity. We bought a California company. The point is, things are going to change. And so you can either sort of bury your head in the sand and say, nope, not in the spec. Or you can be more realistic because you know it's going to happen one way or another because someone is in charge of you. And you can be ready and embrace that change and do it in a happy way, collaborating with your customer. Because the business people and developers have to work together. And I'm totally guilty of this, I have to say. You know, how often is it us versus them? You know, business is over here, tech's over here. God, those business people keep doing. And, you know, they're over there saying, God, those people over, those developer geeks. You know, it's a team. And even when you have clients, you know, if you are not a team with your clients, you're not doing your best for the client, and the client's not getting, you know, their best out of you, and they're not doing their best for themselves. Because if you're not working together as a team, there's a problem. And Agile just kind of cuts straight to the core and says, hey, we're going to expect changes to happen, and we're going to be prepared for them. And think about what I was saying earlier as far as a tool. Tests are crucial. Well, if you have a late changing requirement, okay, we'll put that change in. We've got tests. We'll know if it breaks anything, and we can, you know, see if the bunny's ears start to droop or not when we make that change. So how can you practice customer collaboration? Putting the user on your team is the best piece, whatever that means, whether that means getting someone from the business team to share an office in your all's pod or whatever it is in your physical location, getting a business advocate who actually answers the phone when you call or that you can have pretty reliable access to. And another way to collaborate with the customer is to collect user stories. This is a classic thing out of like Ward Cunningham and such, using index cards, which are real high-tech, just plain paper index cards. I should have one, but I'm not high-tech enough to have paper. Index cards, capturing user stories. The beautiful thing about using an index card to describe a piece of functionality is you have a 3x5 piece of paper to write stuff on, and it has to be legible. You cannot write, you know, a 5-page spec on an index card, but you should be able on an index card to explain how something happens. You know, a user places an order. Well, what's that mean? You know, you keep asking why, you get down to it, you find out you've got multiple stories, because, well, maybe the user has to register. Oh, well, that won't fit on this card. Let's have a card called the user registration, and now we know that ordering depends on the user being registered, and we've got multiple cards to use. You end up with a shoebox full of cards. Those cards are the inputs into your development process. You pick how many of those cards you think you can get done in the next cycle of 3 or 4 weeks. Start working through those cards. A new requirement comes along, goes on a card. You put it in the pile. You say, hey, too many cards. Which one has to go? You put a card back in the box. That's literally the process of Scrum. And that's how a lot of these other methods work as well. And you might have heard Michael Smith talk about personas. Instead of actually putting names on users, even if they're not real. You know, Bob makes an order. Who's Bob sending an order to? Well, Bob sent in the order to Aunt Mary. Then you can have much more intelligent conversations by knowing that user Bob is a particular kind of user, knowing Aunt Mary is a particular kind of user. You don't end up having the, well, you know, we have one of those users, you know, one of the gold member users. What's gold member again? Are they the ones who get free shipping? No, it's platinum that gets free shipping. You don't get stuck with any of that stuff. You've got Bob. And you've defined who Bob is. You've written a little story about Bob. And all this stuff sounds flaky and touchy-feely and all that. And I'm a trained scientist. I was a chemist. So touchy-feely just makes me hurl. But it works, and that's why I like it. So having people, you know, that you can talk about. You can even name your tests after these people when you're defining them, because your user acceptance tests flow from the stories. So you've got this user case that says, well, someone places an order. Well, who places the order? Well, this is Bob placing an order. Well, okay, who's Bob sending it to? He sent it to Aunt Mary. What's he buying? Well, it's his Christmas order. Okay, Bob buys the Christmas order and sends to Aunt Mary. There you go. You've got your user story. You can pull out all the functional requirements. You can pull out the inputs and outputs because you know what that user is, what that order is, what that ship-to address is. You've got all those pieces there, and you can talk about it intelligently as opposed to kind of fumbling around. You can make sure that you know exactly what everybody's talking about. And the best way to collaborate with a customer is short iterations, because as long as they're getting feedback and you're getting feedback, the cycle keeps working, and if there's a long break, you don't get that. And having the app always accessible is the only way for the customer to give you good feedback whenever they want. And it's good for everybody because it, you know, kind of makes you put your money where your mouth is. Oh, yeah, I can build that. Well, let's see what it's like. Oh, well, it's kind of broken right now. I can't really show. When can I see it? We'll see it later. Agile, you know, you need the app to be always accessible. It doesn't always have to be the latest that was checked in the subversion, because, you know, the bunny's ears might be drooping for a day if there's a really big refactoring. But there should be something that's always accessible. And so finally, responding to change. You know, again, welcome changing requirements, focusing on simplicity. Those things are going to help you respond to change. But finally, there's the, at regular intervals, reflecting on how well the last iteration went. What do you do during that reflection? You say, you know, we bit off more than we can chew. Next time, we're not going to do as many stories as we did. We were way off on our estimates. Now we know that we aren't quite as fast at getting these stories done as we thought, so we're only going to pick 5 cards out of the box next week. You might say, you know, 3 weeks was too long, too short, not quite right, so let's do it a little longer. You might say, you know, I felt that I got stuck with the database the whole time, and I'm really good with the database, but what happens if I'm hit by a bus? Let's have, you know, someone else do the database, and let me focus on the style sheets, because I'm really crappy at that, but this cycle, let's get me better at the stuff that I'm not good at, so we have a better, more fully functional team, so when I'm on vacation, the database doesn't go, you know, all to hell, and the bunny's ears don't droop the whole time I'm away. Because they could send the bunny with me so I can get the feedback. So practices to respond to change. This is the place where testing is crucial, because if you have tests, I can't emphasize this enough, and tomorrow morning we'll talk about how to do these tests. If you have tests, you should have no fear. You know, well, I don't know if Sean's new release candidate's as good as the Fusebox 4.1. It's supposed to be compatible. Well, I got tests. I can put it in and see if it works, see if it breaks anything. If it doesn't break anything, I can feel pretty good. If it does, that might be good feedback for Sean. It might be good feedback for something that's broken in my application. Simplicity lets you respond to change. It's really easy to change things that are simple and easy to understand. You know, if statements nested 6 deep with multiple conditions and stuff like that, that's hard to figure out what's going on even if you wrote it. So simplicity helps you respond to change. Testing helps you respond to change. Collective ownership of code. So it's not just me because I'm the DB guy, or you because you're the CSS person. Testing helps respond to change. And the reflection, you know, actually taking the process that you're going through with development and reflecting on that and changing that. And there's testing. I'm a little bit of a testing guy, you can start to tell. I never thought, I got to say, just complete honesty, I never thought I'd be a testing guy. I never wanted to be on a QA team, never wanted any of that. It's more interesting than I thought, I guess. So to summarize, agile development practices. There's practices around planning, which involve the user stories, putting the customer on the team. There's the iterating is a common agile development practice. Short cycles, continuous integration, steady pace. There's testing, of course. Refactoring. Refactoring's changing code to make it better. In a really good agile shop, you refactor whether you wrote the code or not. You can say, you know, Bob wrote that, but I think I can write it a little better because Bob didn't really think about this thing. I'm going to write it a little better. And I have tests, so I know that whether I broke it or not. It's not that it's Bob's code. It's our code. It's our team's code. So I should be able to make changes, too. And that I should be able to make it simpler. And continuous integration, I just pulled that out separately because continuous integration with the testing and the automation just seems to be key to making all this work. So one thing that you can do personally to become a little more agile, there's personal mantras. This comes out of extreme programming specifically. This is one of the personal mantras. What's the simplest thing that will work? Right off the bat, you don't need to write a database caching layer to cache all the stuff. Because you don't know if you need it or not. Why would you go through all that work? This is a true sidebar story. I worked in a shop where one of the guys spent 5 weeks tuning the core of Fusebox 3. 5 weeks. I spent 5 weeks building the application as a contractor. And at the end of that, they fired him and they made me an offer. And, you know, I felt bad for him, but because all along, you know, we were like, why on earth are you doing this? And he decided that he had to squeeze a few more percent of performance after that because they needed it. They didn't even have an existing business, so they didn't know what the load would be. They were expecting this load that was millions of people, and I still do occasional work with that business. 4 years later, they do, you know, a few hundred orders a day. So, you know, clearly that time was well spent. But, you know, focusing on the simplest thing that will work is good. Being able to take an order is a lot more important than, you know, figuring out a good, better caching system. That doesn't always mean that it's an easy thing. Sometimes the simplest thing is hard to do, but you don't always need to start. You don't even need a database to start. You know, I mean, just because you know you're going to need data sometime, you don't have to start configuring a database and coming up with design, because if the design changes, then you need to alter table scripts. Well, now someone else has already written a trigger against that, and you go down this spiral, and no one wants to change anything. Simplest thing that'll work, a good personal mantra. And it goes along with this one, you aren't going to need it, is a really classic mantra from the XP world. Caching, you aren't going to need it. Pooling, connection pooling, you aren't going to need it. You just should, you know, make a really good case for yourself that you do need it. You should always ask, you know, assume that you don't need it and have to make a case for yourself that you do need it. EJBs, you're not going to need it. And probably one of the most famous ones, this is one of the big ones with the pragmatic programmers, is dry. Don't repeat yourself. You know, you've seen a little bit of that if you saw Sean's thing on factories this morning about putting all the configuration in one place. Anytime you have to type the same thing again, or anytime you find yourself cutting and pasting big blocks of code, you really need to ask yourself if there's a good reason for doing that, because you're making your maintenance more complex, you're taking any potential bugs and you're multiplying them. You are adding just pure number of lines to your code, which makes your life more complicated. Don't repeat yourself. Maybe it's time to say, you know, we repeat this 3 times, let me pull it into a function in the CFC and just call a function that'll do that. So don't repeat yourself. And, you know, that goes right into the, someone notices that they wrote some code that you just wrote, well, collective ownership of the code, let me refactor that into a method. I'm going to create a new object, I'm going to change their code to use that new object that does exactly the same thing my needs, and now we all have the same code all in one place. We're not repeating ourselves. So a couple of personal mantras you can take home right away. If you want formal agile methodologies that implement these practices, Alistair Coburn has the Crystal methodologies. There are books on Crystal. It's heavily researched, and there are several varieties of Crystal that you can do. Scrum is pretty popular. You can find out a lot about it at controlchaos.org. Uses the analogy to rugby, if you're familiar with rugby and the scrum. One of the classic things from Scrum that lots of people use, regardless of the Agile methodology, is the morning stand-up meeting. Meetings are shorter if you're standing up instead of sitting down. Sit-down meetings with an hour that are scheduled, has one ever ended early, or do they just last an hour and you sit down? When you're standing up, you get your meeting done, you go to work, because you want your coffee, you've had your coffee and you need to go to the bathroom, you want to check your email, whatever reason there is, stand-up meetings are very short, quick, and to the point. And Scrum uses 30-day cycles and this thing called a backlog. It's a pretty straightforward methodology to implement. It works a little better in slightly bigger groups. Some of the Agile methods work really well with very small groups, like 3, 4, 5. Scrum tends to be a little bigger. And even Mr. Coburn over there says they top out at about 50. Once you get past about 50 developers, you usually end up needing a more formal, more sophisticated development method. But even then, sometimes you end up with lots of little Agile groups, even though the whole thing is managed a different way. And finally, extreme programming. Kent Beck and all of his cronies. Extreme programming, there's just a ton of info out there. It's probably the most popular. One of its key components is pair programming. There's a lot of similarities. So they all took these principles and they implemented them into specific methodologies. They're all derivatives of the general idea. And they were all involved in coming up with the Agile Manifesto. And there's plenty of argument about which one of these is better and why they work better, blah, 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 blah. This is a scary thought. This is from PeopleWare, which is a pretty famous kind of like, you know, business management book. The average software developer doesn't own a single book on the subject of his or her work. And this was from the second edition, which I think was in 1996, 1997. I might be a little off. And I thought this was bunk till I started doing interviews. And then I found out when I commonly ask a question about what are the three books that come out of your box first when you move into a new office, or the three that, you know, are at the top shelf, or the three, basically, you know, name the three books that are most important to you in your day-to-day computer work, whether you use them every day or not. And a lot of people can't even name three books, can't even come up with the names of three books. I don't know whether they're on their shelf or not, but they can't come up with three books. If you can't come up with three books, you might want to think about what books might be useful. And I'm going to give you, as you can imagine, a couple of books here in just a second. Here's how to invest in people if you're in a managerial role. Invest in books. Invest in conferences, because that's individuals and interactions. Training. In the environment. I worked with a company that was in the bottom floor of a building, and it flooded on average once a quarter because it was like below ground. And so it was always dark and damp and moldy. And how on earth could they expect anybody to get their jobs done? That's when you give them laptops and say, go work at home or go work in a coffee shop. The environment affects how useful it is. Bunny's ears would droop the whole time in that environment. Investing in people with letting them do some R&D or side projects, even if it's not directly related to work. Hey, I want to try this Cold Spring thing. This Unity looks pretty cool. That's fine. That's a good way to find out if this stuff works. And downtime and vacation. I mean, you know, you can't burn people out. So speaking of vacation, I have a vacation house just, you know, up the road here. If you all want to be on the lake, it's nice. Good place to go. Anyhow, So thought you'd appreciate that. The nice thing about it is it's got no internet connectivity on purpose, so it's a really good for that vacation week you get, because you're going at a slow and steady pace so you don't burn yourself out. So initial steps to agility. Continuous integration. If you're management or you are management, what's the quickest return on my investment with this agility garbage? Continuous integration is your quickest return on investment. Source control if you don't have it. Next steps, automating your deployment before you even get into testing, and then start testing. If you've got a new application or application you're starting on, you should be looking at unit testing. If you've got an existing app, you should start with application level tests, functional tests, things with Selenium. That is where your biggest return on investment is going to be. You will gain hours, and I'm not making that up, of time between source control and deployment. I just can't emphasize that enough. And then if you want your biggest ROI, investing in the people is probably what to do. So the quickest one is getting some specific tools in place, but the best one is getting the people in place. So general book list. So this is, you know, what you can call for your three books that are the ones that come straight out when you move into a new office. If you've never read The Pragmatic Programmer by Andy Hunt and Dave Thomas, you owe it to yourself to do that. They are really nice guys. It's a classic. It's probably one of the best-selling, truly computer-oriented computer books of all time, especially among developers. Very recently, they came out with one called Practices of an Agile Developer, which is pretty fun. It kind of tells you how to know if you're doing Agile. It tells you what things feel like if you are doing particular Agile principles. And these are all pretty thin books. You can get through them pretty easy. They're really, really great books. That's Andy Hunt again writing that one. That one just came out about a month ago. You can see a theme here. Agile Software Development by Robert Martin is a really good book for combining design patterns and agile methodology and agile practice with a little bit of a hint of extreme programming in it with a very solid Java focus. So Bob Martin's book is a good one for that. If you haven't read Code Complete by Steve McConnell, preferably the second edition, that's one of the all-time classics of the developer. You can sort of see that this is the stack I would give new developers when I hire them. Just this stack of books is, regardless of what programming language you're in. And this sounds like a cheesy title. My job went to India and all I got was this lousy book by Chad Fowler. Chad Fowler has really been around a lot, and it's about investing in you. So even if you work in one of those environments where no one wants to be agile but you, no one wants to, you know, be interesting or adventurous with code, to, you know, if you're kind of stuck in one of those jobs that you're just desperate to get out and you're sort of just stuck there, this is a good book about investing in yourself, building your own building your own brand, for lack of a better word, and just getting yourself into a really good position. So a couple of specific books about tools and technologies. The trilogy is really good for getting started. This comes from the Pragmatic Programmers again. Book on source control, book on unit testing, book on project automation, which is basically a book on Ant and the lava lamp thing and all that sort of stuff. There's two flavors of source control. They've got one on Subversion, one on CVS. There's two flavors of unit tests. They've got one for Java and JUnit, one for .NET and InUnit. The JUnit one's pretty legible for ColdFusion developers in my experience. And then they've got the other one here. They're just great books for getting specific, practical, and not overwhelming information about unit testing, source control, and the whole stack of them. All three of those books are about the same size as one of the smaller SAMs, Teach Yourself in 24 sort of thing. So it's not a lot of book, but the amount of good info in there is pretty high. If you're scared about branching in source control and dealing with a branch and how to do all that, you know, that's a good way to learn about it, the source control book. If you're feeling like you need to do design patterns, Head First Design Patterns is probably the best book out there right now for design patterns. It's from O'Reilly, and it's on Taffy Sierra's imprint. It's a pretty spectacular book on design patterns. And some conversations and conferences. If you're interested in more person-to-person sort of conversations, if you're not on Joel on Software's mailing list, you should be. Joel was here at CF United or Frameworks? He was here last year. And gave like a great talk on design and iPod. Joel knows a lot about software, and his stuff is always interesting. He's done a couple of collected books of writings on software and software development. If you want to understand what Hungarian notation really means, he's a good person to talk to. That's one of his classic things. Terratech, of course, is really good for the kind of interactions that help you build yourself up. You know, CF United, obviously, right now. The Frameworks Conference, which is usually in September, I hear rumblings it might be in January or February this coming year. It hasn't been announced yet one way or another. But the Frameworks Conference is usually pretty interesting because it's focused on frameworks as opposed to just ColdFusion. And then I'm a big fan of the O'Reilly conferences. If you want to get an overview of what's going on, this is where you see a lot of the Agile stuff. They have open source conferences every July in Portland. They have ones in Europe in September in Benelux, in Belgium, or Brussels, Amsterdam, somewhere in that vicinity. And their emerging tech conference is like where you would have seen Ajax happen first because Flickr was there. And it's where you would have seen voice over IP happen first with Asterisk because they were there first. And where you'd see a lot of really cool things early. That's usually in March in San Diego. So they're all good places to interact with people to get that information about what's cool, what's interesting, what might help you become a little more agile and to invest some time in you and yourself. Software, CFC unit and CF unit, Selenium, Grindr, so that's all your testing software. Subversion for version control, Track, which is a sort of a management and bug tracking tool on top of Subversion, Ant for building, and Eclipse for development are all some of the pieces of software that might make you more agile. And thanks. I appreciate your attention, and let me deviate from this. I'll be happy to answer questions. I'll tell you, I will be focusing on individuals and interactions at the Network Expo and at the bar, so if you don't get a hold of me directly. But yeah, yes, sir. Yeah. Am I going to have the slides? Yeah, I'm going to put all of these slides up on my corporate site when I can get a network connection that's reliable. So it'll, you know, count on it by next week. If Michael has a place that they're willing to put them, I'll happily put them there. Because certainly the books are useful to know. Yes, sir, Jim. Any interest in a unified process? Like rational? Yeah, Maxim's the guy to ask about rational, because they do it, and they do it sort of agile. I make fun of rational, but I shouldn't. It's one of those times when I sort of use all of the bad things about waterfall, which have sort of been wrapped up in rational. And there's even an extreme programming implementation, if you will, of RUP called like DXP or something like that, that's pretty interesting. Rational Unified is, again, usually when it seems to be when you're getting a bigger team, because Agile has a limit. Agile has a hard limit of about 40 to 50 people, and that's big on Agile. Usually Agile teams tend to be like 5 to 15 people. That's kind of the sweet spot, which describes a lot of startups, a lot of small software organizations in a bigger organization. So it covers a lot of things. And you don't use Agile for things like building pacemaker software for embedded, you know, devices in hearts, and you don't use it for F-16s. And, you know, there are systems where checks and balances are more important and requirements are not going to change. And, you know, there are other environments, but we're in the web. Cold Fusion doesn't run on anything but the web. So, you know, there's rarely a Cold Fusion application that has 600 programmers working away for 3 years to build something. At least I hope not. All right, you all have been great. Thanks for your time. Please feel free to talk to me, to find me afterwards. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.